Now we turn our attention back to our roundtable participants today, Laura Washington in Chicago, Eric Deggans in Florida, and George Curry in Maryland. George, let me start with you. You watched some of the funeral yesterday. For your take, too political or just right?
Well, I watched all of it. I thought that people, particularly Joe Lowery, said what needed to be said. You can't come there and sanitize and pretend that everything is all right when some of the people there had fought against everything that Mrs. King and Dr. King had fought for. I mean, so I thought it was important that you not do that. And also, they were trying to sanitize the message anyway by not having recognized a civil rights leader who had worked with Dr. King, not allowed him to share the platform, like Reverend Jackson, who actually called Coretta King to let her know her husband had been killed. So having said that, though, I thought it was a good mix. And as Dr. Lowery just said, it was done in the right tone and everything. But I don't want to, you know, everybody clamor about Clinton and his speech and everything. I don't want people to miss something that Jimmy Carter said, not the attacks. I mean, they were necessary and should have done that. But there was a moment there. He acknowledged that he, a white Southerner, would not have been elected, even considered a serious candidate for president in 1976, had it not been for Dr. King and Coretta King. And to me, that was a moment like Bill Clinton had said about Ron Brown, you know, had it not been for him, I wouldn't be elected president. And I thought that was a tremendous acknowledgement of the contribution of African-American leaders and the black vote.
Yeah, speaking of Daddy King and Mrs. King, you mentioned Jimmy Carter. Let me play something first, and I'll be interested to find out, Laura Washington and Eric Deggans, what you think. Here's Jimmy Carter yesterday at the ceremony.
The efforts of Martin and Coretta have changed America and were not appreciated even at the highest level of government. It was difficult for them, personally, with the civil liberties of both husband and wife violated as they became the targets of secret government wiretapping, other surveillance.
Laura Washington, a lot of attention paid to what Joe Lowery said yesterday, but President Carter didn't miss his chance while having the present president behind him to give him a little slap there.
Well, you know, Taylor Branch, the acclaimed author of the trilogy on King, is in town in Chicago this week, and he has written extensively about the relationship between J. Edgar Hoover and King and between Lyndon Johnson, and it was a very difficult, painful relationship. We had four presidents at the funeral yesterday, but there was not a president at all at Martin Luther King's funeral. So that says both how far we've come, but it also says the reason why it's so important for us to be political. And I saw nothing wrong with the politicization of that funeral yesterday. I want to cite another white president, Bill Clinton, in terms of his remarks. It was interesting that it took him to make the case both about the fact that Coretta Scott King was a human being. She was not an icon that we should put up on a pedestal. She was real, she was human, and we should learn from her human frailties as well as her successes. And also the point he made about the King Center and the fact that African Americans perhaps have not, especially wealthy African Americans, have not put their feet forward on saving and resourcing that center. It took a white president in that environment to say that, so thank God for politics.
Mm-hmm. Eric Deggans, one of the things for those who like to take the political temperature of the nation, at least black America, if you believe the crowd that sat in that massive church, this bodes well for a possible run for Mrs. Clinton. We heard the president talking about present and past presidents, and then we heard someone from the crowd yell out as she stood next to her husband, future presidents, meaning Mrs. Clinton. How much do you think that's a barometer of things to come?
Well, you got to bear in mind that Hillary could not have been at a more friendly crowd. I mean, if anybody was going to embrace her, this crowd was going to embrace her. Polling just consistently shows that she's an incredibly polarizing figure. And I couldn't help but watch Bill Clinton give his speech and wish that we could get a third term out of this guy. I mean, the sharpest, smartest, most truthful guy among the politicians to take the lectern that day. Hillary is going to be problematic because she's so polarizing.
Well, Eric, you know there are going to be people that take issue with that most truthful statement, but go ahead.
Well, that day, I'll give him that. Hillary is going to be polarizing, and if she is a nominee, she's going to be the perfect stick that the Republicans will use to to beat her with. I mean, she engenders as much negative feeling as she does positive. So I would not take a whole lot from that reaction, because this is the crowd that's going to be solidly in her corner no matter what she does.
All right, let's talk about political polarization, if you will. And one of the things that we've seen over the course of this week is Senators John McCain and Barack Obama going to task over reform for lobbying, letters going back and forth between the two. McCain suggesting that the young senator from Illinois is simply using this issue not as a means of finding bipartisan help, but certainly as a polarizing effect, something to stick the Republicans with. We are told now that they've kissed and made up, and they're going to hold hands with this movement to reform lobbying in Washington. George Curry, do you buy any of that?
I'm waiting for them to sing "We Shall Overcome," but I guess that's maybe next week. You know, John McCain, you have to understand, he's a bombastic person. He's a street fighter, and that's some people like or don't like about him. And this, the whole thing did not have to be as public. This is actually the first time I know of anybody really of stature really publicly criticizing Obama. But I thought Obama does what Democrats do in the face of attack. He kind of wimped out when he said that, you know, you question my sincerity and my desire to put aside politics, but it hasn't diminished my respect for you or my willingness to work for you. You know, that's a whimper response. You know, fight back and say, hey, I meant what I said. If you meant it, say it.
I think Obama and his people were really taken aback by that response that they got from McCain. McCain wrote a letter in response to a letter that Obama sent him that he felt was inappropriate. And I think they weren't ready for that. So I also think that Obama has been very carefully crafting this image of being this bipartisan guy who reaches across party lines, who's above the fray, and he wants to maintain that image. So I think George, that's why he backed off. He doesn't want to be perceived as a political street fighter right now. And I think McCain is in a position where he feels he owns this campaign finance ethics issue. And who's this young whippersnapper, you know, coming around to tell him how he should think about campaign finance?
I think
it's a tempest in a teapot, and it's already.
I got to say, what seems obvious here is that when Obama leaked the original letter that he wrote about his approach to this ethics problem, McCain wanted to slap this young guy back into his place.
Absolutely.
And so he's taken to the public airwaves, and he's criticized him publicly, and Obama, suitably chastened, has sort of stepped back. This is a lot of inside politics, and I'm just wondering what any of this has to do with the issue at hand, which is ethical reform.
Eric, but Harry did, but he didn't. Obama didn't release the letter. Harry Reid did. And so that's how it got out there. I mean, Obama didn't release the letter.
But I think what
George, that perhaps Harry Reid is taking a point from your book, and that's the idea that we need to leak this, we need to get this out in the media to start some of this, to make it look like we have some backbone. But obviously, if as you suggest, perhaps the messenger needed to be a little feistier.
I think the question here is, what does this really mean for reform? And I think we should be troubled. It may be a tempest in a teapot. It may have blown over. But the fact that the two very respected, high-profile, bipartisan figures are bickering over, you know, semantics and over the structure of a committee or of a task force, I think doesn't bode well for the future of any bipartisan discussion on this issue.
Let me bring this up very quickly. I've got to get this in because we're running out of time. And I will warn folks that normally we do not use this word, but there is a differentiation that has to be spelled out, and I don't know any other way to do it. So we're about to use some graphic language for those of you who might want to turn your radio off just for a second, if you will, or turn it down at least. In Kentucky, we are finding that a teacher used the N-word in its slang form, and yes, there is a slang form even of the N-word, and that's nigga, N-I-G-G-A, versus nigger. This is his explanation. When he told a black student to take a seat, he said, "Sit down, N-word." The teacher is suggesting that he used the slang term, and because he used it in that version, he said all the kids use it. He said he was trying to relate to students and thought it was no longer a racial slur or offensive because he put the G-A on it versus the E-R. Eric Deggans, is this any room for credence here?
Well, you know, once again, we've got this sort of intersection of a teacher with questionable judgment with our own sort of conflicted history regarding this word. You know, any white teacher in their right mind would realize that using any form of that word towards a student is something that's ill-advised to say the least. So this guy has questionable judgment. News reports have delved into his history of discipline and resisting policies of the school administration. It's well known. So this guy's a loose cannon. But apart from that, we sort of have our own conflicted relationship to this word, where black folks want to be able to use it with each other, but they don't want white folks to use it against them. And that's a deeper, larger question that is never going to be resolved.
Between you and George.
We can't have a double standard. We can't say it's what's good for blacks is not good for whites. I think educators should be serving as role models and should be educating young people about why this word is so offensive in its history, not using it.
George, we should note very quickly that he's on suspension. He's going to appeal it at the end of the month. Until then, he's on unpaid suspension.
He got a 10-day suspension. We're talking about a freshman here, a high school freshman who's an honor student, a football player, and apparently did not use the word, according to other witnesses. And you have this teacher who has a history of this, have the same thing, had another student who had to put a sign on him and say, "I am gay," and they didn't follow the school's orders then. I mean, 10 days is a slap on the wrist. I think when this happens, certainly from a teacher standpoint, if it's penalty needs to be severe, so it sends a real message out there. 10 days does not really send that much of a significant message to me.
We have to learn how to talk about these issues and avoid the hysteria. And one of the problems with these instances is that people react so quickly, we can't really talk about it.
Got to stop you there. Thanks for being real quick. Laura Washington, Eric Deggans, George Curry, thanks so much. Greatly appreciate it, guys.